Just about 20 minutes past 10 o'clock. This is Talk at 10 here on Marfa Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Travis Bubinick. We've been listening to a couple songs from Marisa Anderson. We're joined in the studio now by Marisa, who's here in Marfa, Texas, for a show being co-presented by Ballroom Marfa this evening. Marisa, thanks for joining us in the studio here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So it's a real treat to have you in town. You're a Portland-based musician.
Yep.
I want to talk about all of your music, all of your work, things you've got planned ahead. But I was hoping that first we could start off with a song, because as I was mentioning, it's sort of problematic to talk about music without hearing what it sounds like first a lot of times. So,
all right. This is a song called Sinks and Rises, and it is about one of the best swimming days that I ever had at a swimming hole in Kentucky.
Marisa Anderson, live at the K Burnett Studios here in downtown Marfa. She's here on Talk at 10, playing a show tonight in Marfa at Ballroom Marfa. Marisa, what was the name of that tune there?
That tune's called Sinks and Rises.
Sinks and Rises, about a particularly enthralling swimming experience.
Yeah, it's a swimming hole in Kentucky called Sinks and Rises, and it's a two-mile system of caverns with pools in them and then waterfalls. It was an incredible place.
Very beautiful sound. I want to start off by talking about the sound. It's of course, it's sort of a sound that is from a road well traveled, but you have a very unique spin on it. It's a very, to me, a sort of rustic and ragged sort of sophistication, if you will. I mean, the playing is very intricate, but the sounds, as we were just sort of hearing, reverberating off the walls here, very, very sharp and sort of shocking at times. I'm just wondering how you developed this sound. I mean, how did you get interested in this type of fingerstyle guitar playing? Where does that come from?
I've been playing guitar since I was about 10 years old, and I started off playing classical guitar. And so I learned technique. I learned a lot of, like, you know, right-hand technique, fancy playing, but the repertoire wasn't that interesting to me, but the playing was, you know, like the physicality of it was, but the, you know, I couldn't really, after about 10 years, I think I went to college for 1 year, and it was, you know, the amount of effort that it took to play those songs wasn't worth to me the material, because, you know, the music that I was drawn to and that I've listened to my whole life is more like folk music and country music and things like that. And so when I write songs, it's sort of a combination of, you know, that history with having technique and some understanding of, like, classical structure and music theory and things like that, combined with like really just a love for a certain sound. Like most of my compositions start with a sound. They start like from the middle and work themselves out. You know, I'm trying to capture like a sound that translates into like a quality of light, or a sound that translates into like a memory that you almost can get to, but mm-hmm. you can't quite, or, you know.
Now, when it comes to writing these songs, this style of song that we just heard with the mm-hmm. lap steel, with the open tunings and, you know, the reverb heavy Fender amp here, do any of these songs start off as acoustic compositions? Because you mentioned your classical training. How do they start off, or do you go straight to the electric guitar?
Mostly they start off electric, because, I mean, if it starts on acoustic, it generally stays there because that's the sound that I'm, you know, it's like I already will know before I write which way it's going to go. And in performance, it's a lot easier to just keep it electric because I'm never satisfied with like how an acoustic guitar sounds when it's amplified. It doesn't sound good through an amp. It doesn't sound good through a sound system. The only way an acoustic guitar sounds good, in my opinion, is acoustically, and that's very difficult if you have a large audience.
The reason I ask about the origin of the songs when it comes to the actual instrument and how they take shape is I'm sitting here watching your fingers work, you know, and just watching what's happening on these songs is very evocative of you know, the Fahey thing and Jack mm-hmm. Rose and all these people. But it seems to me, just from what I've read, you know, in critical reviews of your work, that you've somehow managed to skirt being lumped into the American Primitive group.
Yeah, I don't feel like I belong there at all, actually. I think that John Fahey was a great player. Jack Rose is a great player, but they're not particularly influential in my life or in my playing. See that them more as like people working, you know, in the same trenches. The material that I return to is like usually more like pre-war blues, like 20s, 30s, 40s, that kind of thing. So maybe the similarities are that, you know, we're using the same material, you know, like in the case of John Fahey, he had, you know, access to the 78s and stuff. And now, you know, those have all been reissued, so everyone can hear all of them. I think it's really hard to pull apart influences. I also listen to a lot of 20th century classical music, like Steve Reich, Terry Riley, people like that who are doing really interesting things with sound, you know.
Yeah. So the name of your latest record here, it's called Traditional and Public Domain Songs. Pretty straightforward. These are traditional and or public domain songs. Yeah. And, you know, I like the title because I'm imagining myself being at like a Barnes & Noble and picking up this song and picking up this album and maybe expecting to hear some pretty little folk tunes. And mm-hmm. instead, you know, we hear these scorching electrics and these heavy rhythms, and it's all very loud and very modern. So given all that, I take it you're not a folk or a blues purist, per se.
I'm not an anything purist. No, I think, well, I have very strong feelings about what folk music is versus how it's perceived. At this point, I think culturally, like the understanding of folk music is like someone with an acoustic guitar kind of singing out of their journal or whatever. And to me, I think that's actually not quite accurate. Like folk music, in my opinion, is music that is a shared music. So mm-hmm. it's music that's common experience. Like it's music that comes out of a tradition. And I think that it actually got really stunted, that tradition, when recording happened, because then we got these versions of songs that got recorded and then that became like the right version, whereas I think it's a really dynamic music and it needs to move forward. I think that everything feeds each other, you know, like hip-hop and electronic music and jazz and whatever, you know, anything you hear becomes part of the folk process, you know, because it's part of our shared cultural experience, and we all sure. get to, I think it's more understandable in terms of visual art. Like we understand, you know, it's like everything is up for grabs, but things are really become precious in the music world. And I think that's a limitation. And like, for example, like the song that you played first, A Hard Times Come Again No More, every version that I've ever heard of that song is this, because it's a beautiful melody. So it's this like very sugar-coated, like, very beautiful, very, you know, evocative. But the song, actually, if you listen to the words, it's about standing over someone's grave and just hoping that more terrible things don't happen, you know? And so, like, the performance of the song becomes very disengaged from actually what the song is about, which it's a pretty harsh and desperate song. And so when I, you know, went to record it, I wanted to bring some of that quality back into it. Like, Stephen Foster was not a happy guy. He died really young. He died totally broke. He wrote these incredible songs, and they've way outlived him. But it, what good did it do him, you know?
Right, yeah. So. And, you know, when we talk about the folk process, I'm glad you mentioned that, because to me, a lot of these traditional and public domain songs, this realm that we're talking about and that you're working in here, sort of the music and the things that they're trying to evoke sort of stems from direct experience and stems from the instruments that were at these people's disposal. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. Skip James exactly. only had a guitar and a falsetto voice, and that's what he used to convey this, you know, this sorrow and this sort of otherworldly despair. And I think what I appreciate most about your music is that you're not trying to pretend that we are in the 1920s. It's 2014. There are highways and everything is very, very loud and the world's a chaotic place. And like you just said, I mean, I think that you have this ability to take those songs like the one we were just talking about that are about despair and put it in a very 2014 context where we sort of have to have this sound of the Fender amplifier, you know, of the loud metal banging on the strings to sort of convey the type of sorrow and frustration that we feel in our current
yeah.
day.
And those are the sounds that are around us.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
We're in an industrialized culture. We're not living, you know, most people are not living in a one-room shack, you know, with an outdoor bathroom. And yeah, I mean, we're a fast, loud, noisy culture, and our art and music, that's, you know, it's going to be in there. It's weird to fetishize. I feel like some of that, you know, like sort of reenactment of a style of music when people are presenting things, it's like a weird fetishizing of poverty or weird fetishizing of some tricky race things. It gets a little weird, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I know that people mean to do honor and justice to those artists, and that's good. But I also think that there's a box that people get boxed into.
And we could talk all day about sort of re-envisioning blues history as we've yeah. studied it, but we won't go there right now.
Yeah.
You're listening to Talk at 10 here on Marfa Public Radio. I'm Travis Bubinick, joined in the studio by Marisa Anderson, who's playing a show tonight in Marfa, Texas at Ballroom Marfa. You can find out more information about that online at ballroommarfa.org. Now, I wanted to talk about sort of the evolution of your sound.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this record here. This is the latest, Traditional and Public Domain Songs. It's out on Grapefruit Records. And the one right before that was, the LP right before that was The Golden Hour.
No, it was Mercury.
Oh, Mercury, pardon.
Mercury, yeah.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Mercury and then before that, The Golden Hour on Mississippi. So, you know, all three of these records, instrumental in nature, electric acoustic as on Mercury.
Yeah, there's a few acoustics on there.
But before that, you had a record that wasn't so much in this vein. Is that correct?
Yeah, in 2004, I did a record that was just like singing, you know, songs that I had written and stuff. And I'd also, in between 2004 and 2011, which is when The Golden Hour came out, I was in a like an 8-piece ecstatic jazz improv, like free noise kind of band. And I think that that influenced a lot of what I did going forward from that. And we put out several records that mostly are only available in Portland or online. And before I put out that solo record that's me singing, I was playing guitar and writing songs for like a kind of a 4-piece country-ish singing group. So I've done a lot of different stuff, yeah.
Well, I was hoping we could hear another song
yeah.
here while you're in the studio here. Tell us about the instrument that you're picking up right now.
Well, this one is a Gibson ES-125. It's from the 40s. It was the cheapest Gibson that you could get back then. It's a pretty nice guitar. I like it. I've had it a long time. And what I was playing before was a lap steel, which is kind of like an electric dobro. It's an instrument that originated in Hawaii and was used for Hawaiian music, but got co-opted by sort of country and blues artists. It's usually played single notes. You kind of not hardly ever played the way that I play it. That's, you know. The next song I'm going to do is kind of a theme and variation on an old blues, one of the first blues I ever learned, which was the Hesitation Blues. There's probably about 200 versions of this song in existence. And one of my favorite versions is the Reverend Gary Davis. And when I, you know, like I said, I studied classical guitar, and so we had to learn like Giuliani and Bach and Segovia and all these things. And That was great. And then when I started learning Reverend Gary Davis songs, I was like, why is this guy not being taught in that con? I was like, this is as harmonically and rhythmically and like every kind of complex as anything that's, you know, in the classical songbook. So that was a really interesting discovery for me. So anyway, this is the Hesitation Blues taken apart and put back together again, my own way. So I call it Hesitation Theme and Variation Blues.
Marissa Anderson live here on Marfa Public Radio. Marissa Anderson, live here on Marfa Public Radio. You're listening to Talk at 10. Good morning, I'm Travis Bubinick. We're joined here by Marissa, who's playing a show at Ballroom Marfa tonight in Marfa, Texas. You can find out more at ballroommarfa.org. So that song, you mentioned a variation on some Reverend Gary Davis themes. When it comes to writing songs like that, when you're sort of picking apart these different elements of folk tunes or blues tunes or whatever kind of tunes that are inspiring you, does improvisation play a key in the songwriting process there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, my sets run anything from totally free improv to set pieces like that don't change that much. But I don't ever play a song the same way twice. And when I'm writing, for sure, I'll get this idea or this, you know, the sound that I'm kind of reaching for, and I'll just try every path that I can think of to get there, you know? And it's surprising, like, on a, you know, in front of a different audience, something else is going to work, or on a different day, or, you know, it's just like my own relationship with the songs change over time. All of the songs are dynamic. None of them are static. And so if they ever just sort of stop changing or stop growing, I become bored with them and I don't play them anymore until I'm ready to come back to them with something new.
I want to go back to this latest record again that we were talking about earlier, Traditional and Public Domain Songs out on Grapefruit Records. Now, this record came together through a pretty unique setting, and I mean, I don't know how much of a norm this is, but you were an artist in residence at a community radio station in Portland.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, so KBOO, that's Portland's community radio station. It's been there for about 45 years. They just started an artist-in-residence program, and I was there first. And the idea was that I could have a year to use the studio's resources and make something, whatever it was. And so, at the same time, I had been approached by Grapefruit the record label to do a project, and the idea of that label is for artists to do things that they wouldn't normally do, you know, to do sort of special projects. And so I was like, well, it's a community radio station, and so I wanted to do something that spoke to the idea of like shared ownership, things that were all of ours, like state lands, national parks, public domain songs, community radio. Like, these are all things that are all of ours, and the more that we use them, the better they are. And so I thought that to do public domain songs and then put them out on this label would be a nice way to sort of, dovetail those projects. So I spent, the main thing that was nice about using the relationship with the record or the radio station was the listening library that they had, because, you know, 45 sure. years worth of stuff to listen to. So like on my last tour, I just, you know, loaded up the iPod with all kinds of like obscure, like folk and blues and hillbilly collections, and just really like tried to get some of that in my ear. And then they also had really nice microphones. Mm-hmm. And so I usually record at home. So they let me take the mics home and use them for as long as I needed for making that record. So that was really nice too.
Yeah, it's a really unique setup. I don't know that I've ever heard of an artisan residence program at a community radio station.
It's modeled after that happened in Seattle that I don't think is happening anymore, but it's called Jack. I can't remember, but they got the idea from this program in Seattle.
Yeah. Seems like something we should look into, being that we're in Marfa and all.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that came out of that residency, if I'm not mistaken, was a split 7-inch.
Yeah. KBOO was celebrating their 45th anniversary, and they had some unreleased live Elizabeth Cotton material from a broadcast that they had done in the 70s. And they thought, what better thing? So they put some Elizabeth Cotton songs on the A side, some unreleased instrumental numbers that they don't show up on any of her other records. And then they asked me to compose something for the B side. And so I did like a trio of like a medley of gospel songs.
Yeah.
So, which I will play tonight, but I won't play right now.
So what is that like? I mean, seeing your name on the flip side
was pretty crazy.
Of an Elizabeth Cotton record. I mean, did you ever expect that would happen?
No, never in a million years. I mean, I was, when they asked me to do it, I was like, are you sure?
Right. Seems like maybe it's sacred waters you're treading there.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I felt, kind of a get on your knees moment for sure,
Well, we only got a few minutes here. I wanted to maybe hear another song if you've got time for it. Again, we're joined in the studio by Marisa Anderson. She's playing a show at Ballroom Marfa this evening. More details are online at ballroommarfa.org. And what do you think we're going to hear next, Marisa?
I think we're going to hear a song called Deep Gap, which this song is kind of a tribute to the late, great Doc Watson. Deep Gap is the name of the place in North Carolina that he was from. And this is kind of just comes from listening to some Doc Watson records. I did get to see him live. That was nice. And there's like a quality to his playing, this very clean, crisp, airy, light touch that he had, very precise. And I don't have that touch. I'm a little bit more ham-fisted. But that was sort of the sound that started the recipe for this song. And this song has changed quite a bit since I recorded it. Lots of different parts come and go. So it's kind of a good example of what we've been talking about. Thank you.
Marissa Anderson, live here on Marfa Public Radio. This is Talk at 10. I'm Travis Bubinick. Thanks for joining us this morning. Marissa's playing a show at Ballroom Marfa tonight. Like we've said before, there's more info available at ballroommarfa.org. Marissa, again, as we're ending our conversation here, thanks again so much for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure.
I want to close out with a song off of The Golden Hour. This is the first record that I heard, but this is one of the first songs that I heard that really caught me. Before we get into the song, this is on Mississippi Records, which is a very carefully hand-curated label, very boutique, you could say. Did they approach you for this record? How did this come together?
Yeah, so The Golden Hour was the first record that came out of mine that came out on Mississippi, and Eric is the guy that runs that label. We'd been kind of going back and forth for about 6 years. He'd been wanting me to make a record for that long, and I kept telling him that I just didn't want to. I wasn't ready. I knew. It's really fun to make a record. It's not always that fun to have that record in the world and feel responsible for it. And I knew I just wasn't ready, you know? And I also knew that that's a really good label. Like, for me, you know, we match really well, what I do and what that label does. And I didn't want to make a record until I really felt like it was the right record to make for, you know, Mississippi Records to put out. And so I waited a long time. And then finally he came to see me play one night. And he's like, "You are ready now. Go do it." And so I was like, okay. And then I spent about a year still, you know, it took me about a year to make The Golden Hour. And it came out and it was, you know, people liked it. And so he was like, "Well, let's just do another one." And so then Mercury came out. And I expect that there will be more because he's already talking about that. So.
Alrighty.
Sometimes I need a push.
Yeah, well, we're certainly glad that he talked you into it, and yeah. We look forward to hearing the records to come. Well, we're going to go out with one off The Golden Hour called Dust Devil, and this is a song from Marissa Anderson, who's been joining us in the studio here on Marfa Public Radio. This is Talk at 10. I'm Travis Bubinick. You can find archived episodes of Talk at 10 or this episode later this morning online at marfapublicradio.org. And Marissa, of course, is playing a show tonight in Marfa, Texas, at Ballroom Marfa. The information is online at ballroommarfa.org. Thanks again so very much for coming in. It's been a total pleasure.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me.